Welcome, I am Halcyon. It is 1 o'clock on the West Coast. It is Hug Nation time. Probably shouldn't slurp so loud in the microphone. The Nonsense Man was here last week. There is an awesome full-length archive on YouTube, and you could also cruise back into either one of our streams and hear us talking about all sorts of good stuff. And you should subscribe, because I was just listening to him rattle off some dope-ass sampling, looping, harmonica, beatboxing stuff. And then the most glorious thing happened. It started to sound a little off, and Zachary said, "That was a train wreck. We have a train wreck happening here. That's a thing that happens." And then he said, "I think as often as I can have that feeling of I'm fucking up, it's fucking up, oh fuck, I'm fucking up, as much as I can have that feeling without totally losing it, the better." And I was like, oh man, that is such good advice to cultivate that, you know, quote unquote failure, cultivate the awkwardness or the cultivate and just get comfortable in that state of not right. I know that I sometimes am so eager to fix things, to make things right, to keep it perfect, that I will quit the minute things go wrong. And that's like a new hobby. I'll start something, or like, oh, someone will go, you got to try this, it's so much fun. Whether that be snowboarding or poi spinning or masturbation. Actually, no, I'm pretty good at, you know, getting back on the horse when I mess up when it comes to sexual things. But my point is, I thought it was a beautiful live demonstration of creative expression, and then a not perfect creative expression that in the sharing of and in the embracing of that was even more significant and more beautiful than a polished performance. So thank you, Nonsense Man. Thank you, Zachary Winchester. Thank you for your bravery in the sharing of yourself and your stumbles, which happen to be triumphs. And if that made no sense, it's not going to get any better. Welcome, I am Halcyon. This is Hug Nation. Today, I want to talk about radical inclusion. Radical inclusion is one of the 10 principles of Burning Man. And it's significant, and it has multiple, I think, levels on which it works. There is a aspect of Burning Man of embracing the stranger. And this last weekend was Coachella, or the first weekend of the Coachella weekends. Side note, I went to the first Coachella, and actually I was in, back when Vice Magazine was an actual magazine, I was featured in Vice Magazine as a Coachella fashion don't. I would take that as a huge badge of honor. I was wearing a sky blue leisure suit, open and chest out, with a sequin silver cowboy hat and my hair in these tiny braids. So, and my shoes also had silver sequins on them that matched the sequin hat. I thought I was, fly with a capital Bzzz, but I could see how, if you were, a poorly paid journalist looking for fashion don'ts, I could easily fill the role of scapegoat for obnoxiousness. But this weekend was Coachella, and Coachella is an example of a place that I think, I haven't been in many, many, many years. I went the first 2 years. After that, I don't feel included in the radical inclusion of Coachella. I feel, there is a vibe of, the Jenners and the Kardashians and the Instagram influencers and this kind of fashion show on the polo grounds kind of vibe. I don't even know if that's true, but let's, for the sake of this argument, let's say that is true, and let's say that radical inclusion is the antidote of that. Radical inclusion is saying that you are welcome. You, as an authentic human expression, is welcome. If you are authentic. And I think that is such this liberating idea. Burning Man is not for a type of person. It's not for cool kids. It's not for visual artists. It's not for partiers. It's for people who are drawn to it. If you are drawn to it, then you are welcome. And people often get really frustrated with an influx of people that are different than them. The real frustration I think people have is when there's an influx of people who don't get the vibe of Burning Man, that don't understand the principles, that come seeking a Coachella experience or come seeking a music vibe experience or come seeking hot naked girls. People classify those as bros or frat guys or something like that. And as someone, a former bro and frat guy, I'm especially appreciative of the idea of radical inclusion because it means whatever you've been does not preclude you from becoming your true, amazing, incredible self. And if you can get around enough people who are expressing authentically, you will have more encouragement to express authentically, and you can crack out of your bro shell or find a way to remain your bro self and do so as a gift to Burning Man and the planet. And so we have this peace amongst the Burning Man community, even though there's incredibly diverse groups. People say, what kind of person goes to Burning Man? All types of people. You know, people always have these expectations of, I wouldn't like it because, you know, I don't like loud music, or I don't party, or I don't do drugs, right? I'm like, you could spend all day every day going to yoga classes. You could spend all day every day attending lectures and hanging out with scientists, or you could do body work, or you could do trapeze or circus or drugs or listen to music or play music or learn puppetry or orgy. Is that a verb? I orgy, we orgy, nosotros orgemos. My point is, it is the radical inclusion that says, hey, whatever you authentically want to share, it's welcome here. Assuming you can get a ticket, but that's a whole different story. But there's another part of radical inclusion that I wanted to touch on, and that is something that it kind of creeped into my awareness over the years. And that is, and I apologize if I use the wrong terminology, but in terms of making things inclusive to people with special needs. For example, Pink Heart, we serve vegan ice cream. And we have the option of gluten-free cones, and we don't serve alcohol. We try to create a experience that is radically inclusive. We try to create a gift that is available to the lowest common denominator. And it's by design. You know, I'm not saying that every expression, every gift should be accessible to everybody. That would water down everything, and there'd be no point. We just have a bunch of beige, bland stuff. Like, ooh, that's too high. People that are afraid of heights wouldn't like that. Ooh, that's, you know, too spicy. People that don't like spicy food wouldn't like that. No, but I'm saying that there are opportunities within the Burning Man gifting process to take a step back and say, could this be more available to more people? And I think we're seeing that more and more at Burning Man. There is a project going on right now called Stair Ramps to Heaven that I just contributed to, and I encourage others to think about it. They are building ramps for wheelchair access onto art cars, to mutant vehicles. And they're going to have one at the Man and at the Temple, at Mobility Camp, and I think at the 6 and 9 plazas, I believe, so that people who are wheelchair... what's the correct term? See, I'm the downside of our evolving cultures. I'm a little afraid to use language willy-nilly. People who use wheelchairs will have accessibility in these ways, and I think that's awesome. It's a way. It's not saying all art cars need to make sure they do this, or we can't have some. No, it's saying, hey, here's a way that we can make something that's awesome more radically inclusive. Sweet. Another thing that I've done recently is I started to make friends with a bunch of hearing impaired deaf burners and realized that by not putting captions on my videos, I was not being radically inclusive. And so I have started to, not all my videos, because I upload too much and I don't even spend time editing, and so it ends up being problematic. And YouTube does automatic captions if people want to spend any time with it. But for the ones that are Burning Man tips, like this one right now, I will make captions for this because I'm talking about burners and I want to make my Burning Man art, which my Burning Man art is the sharing and talking about principles and enculturation. I want to make my Burning Man art as radically inclusive as possible, and I want to speak and connect to you, because if you're listening to the audio archive only, the podcast, I just put my hands in the I love you hand sign. But please don't sign back with something intricate in sign language, because I'm a little illiterate. But I can say I love you all day long. I want Burning Man to continue to get as crazy and wacky as possible. I think that there should be, you know, tons of stuff that is more than I can handle, that is not taking me into consideration at all, that is too violent for me, that is too exciting for me, that is too acrobatic or too athletic. Yes, keep pushing it in every direction you want. But when there's something that can be made accessible to people who, you know, are older or have a disability or have a quirk or have a dietary restriction, why not? Why not, as a practice, as a culture, just as we're trying to get a culture of consent, a culture of radical inclusion in that way? It is an act of love. I am open to suggestions. If you see ways that me and my camp and the community can be more radically inclusive, let's talk about it. And not in a, you asshole, you don't consider us, but a, hey, here's a new way of thinking about it, because that's the way that we can move forward. And I think that when we're seeking these new ways as a form of art, radical inclusion as art, as a way to be bolder, just like, you know, more LEDs is brighter, more inclusive is like another type of a bigger art. So let's make our art big in scope as well as in heart. Can you tell that I'm getting excited about Burning Man? It's right around the corner. Can't wait to see you at home. And if you're not Burning Man bound, these are concepts that are so helpful in every part of life, and having a community and having people like this, these moments like this where we can support one another and accept one another, we can bring that into every part of our lives and make the default world into a magical place as well. Thank you. I love you. Stay tuned for more Hug Nation. There was a incident at Starbucks this week where two men of color were arrested for being alive, basically. And I don't want to get into the details of that scenario, but I did want to just touch on some of the response around it. And specifically, I wanted to speak to the video that I saw today from the CEO of Starbucks. And I know that Starbucks, I mean, some of this is, I mean, most of this, I'm sure, is just marketing. You know, there's, Starbucks has a brand that is a feel-good brand, and, you know, you could get coffee for much cheaper if you wanted to. You don't turn Starbucks into your mobile office unless you just feel comfortable there. It feels like part of a, it's like you wear a certain brand and you hang out in a certain brand and you eat, and Starbucks has rocked that, and tons of people associate with it. So whether it is, you know, making recycled cups or bragging about what they do for rainforests inside their stores, they're very invested in making you feel like their values are in line with your values. And, you know, they pay their baristas with, and they give them insurance, and that's my understanding, in a way that, you know, you can kind of feel good about it. So if there's something that happens in a store that makes people question that your values are in line with theirs, it's super dangerous. So the fact that they're doing all this damage control is partially capitalist and self-preservation. That being said, the video that the CEO put out today, I thought was an awesome example of leadership. He basically said, I'm sorry, that was wrong. That should not have happened. And then he said, people have been saying, well, we have disciplinary action against the manager. And he's like, that's not where I think the blame lies. The blame lies with me. Like, this is my fault. I need to you know, our team has to look at our policies. We need to look into new trainings, possibly, I think he called them unconscious bias training, which I thought that was like, I'd never even heard of that before, but that's exactly the issue. I mean, I think as a corporation, you know not to be overtly racist, but how hard is it to address the unconscious bias that creep out in scenarios like that? And I have a little sympathy for him because he's like, we have 28,000 stores and some of them have policies that are not, you know, they don't come from down on high, but still, it's my fault. And I was like, what a different world it would be if the reaction to wrongdoing by politicians, this is what I kept thinking about, was to say, this happened under my watch, or this happened, someone under my direct did this, it's my fault. I'm fixing this. Take it out on me, because it's my fault. Like, that's... Again, I get that it's partially, it's a, their brand is their marketing, but it's also a chance to role model what responsibility can be. So, you know, you sucked last week, but kudos for working on making it better. And I would say that there's nothing wrong with saying I hate Starbucks and I'm never going to eat there again, but I'm also eager to see a culture where we can have fuck-ups that result in progress, where we can have fuck-ups that don't result in deeper division, deeper chasms, and, well, that's proof that you suck and I hate you, and you know, because we know we've got all sorts of unconscious bias. We know we have all sorts of divisions. But if we have an explosive division that then is a chance for progress, and the leaders involved say, whoa, we fucked up, I mean, that's the problem with police violence. It's not that there's police violence and then, you know, the police departments go, oh my gosh, fire these guys. Anybody involved with this, fire them. The problem is that we have police violence, and then people go, well, you know, there probably wasn't any wrongdoing, and, you know, it's like, what? So, growth, listening, progress, anger, and then allowing space for change. So, I'm going to have some, nah, I don't ever drink at Starbucks, because when I go there, I want to order like a Frappuccino chunk chocolate milkshake surprise, and I'm like, this is like the sugar content for a school's worth of children for a week. There's no way I should be, oh, so good. Oh my God, it's so good. Yes, I would like whipped cream. Yes, definitely whipped cream. In fact, can you just fill my palm with whipped cream? Yes, thank you. I had a vasectomy 7-8 years ago, but I froze some sperm and am going to be gifting some of that sperm to a Hug Nation listener. This isn't a contest. That person has already contacted me, and we've already decided. It wasn't like, one of you listeners will receive one vial of my frozen sperm. Although I am only going to give, I think, one or two of my 5 vials, so perhaps in the future we will have that contest. Or maybe it's a Patreon perk. At a certain level, you know what? I think I've now, this is the dead end of that joke. But the donation ain't no joke. I'm going to talk about what Dwayne just wrote in, which is, why does money equal success? Well, in a vacuum, if you don't have any other influence besides the education system of our world, not our world, of our country, and you have the media of this country to teach you about how the world works, then the default scoring system is money. If you don't know what else is out there to care about, and you are in a survival mode, and you're in an acquisition mode, and it's very easy to say, I mean, when in doubt, you can look at your bank account, and that's an actual number. You can actually score it. Oh, cool. I have plus an amount in my bank account. I'm winning. Or I've got so much in my bank account that I can buy this fancy car that the media has told me is associated with success. Ta-da! I'm winning. And that can work until it doesn't, or until you start to realize that this education through socialization and media and the status quo of the world, when you start to realize that that messaging is not the whole story, and that there are things that make you tick, and there are things that make you alive and give you pride and that make you feel at peace are outside of that. Now, financial resources does give you a sense of security. That sense of security is not absolute. You know, no amount of money in the bank keeps you healthy. No amount of money in the bank stops natural disasters. But if there are things that give you anxiety, like making rent or being able to purchase something that you think will make your life better, financial resources do alleviate those stresses. And I'll admit, I am every bit as, I succumb to those fears as well. And try to, like, I'm in a situation now where I have to move out of this place. And so as I'm looking at new places, I think about, do I want to go for a dream house? Or do I want to find an inexpensive room somewhere to extend my runway before I'm, you know, in dire needs of having to work a job that I don't want? And it's very easy to fall into that panicky, pained frustration with the whole world. Like, we're so money focused because basic survival requires such a high level of money. Especially, you know, I was talking to someone recently who pays $250 a month for their room. Now, it's a room in a larger place. They share a large place with a bunch of people, but they have a room for $250. In San Diego, it would be very difficult to get a room for under $600, and that would be very challenging. But, you know, if you want your own place, you're talking $1,500 probably. And so just unless you have the kind of job, a white-collar, generally financially related career, you can't just go make that kind of money without it's very difficult. And so you're put in a situation where you ask questions like this, like, why is money so important? Why is that success? You know, I'm a good person. I add love to the world. I care about people. And yet I can't eat as healthy as I'd like because I can't afford a roof and organic food. Oh, was that supposed to be encouraging and supporting and uplifting? No, the trends in the economics world we live in right now do not give me a lot of joy. You know, as we see tax breaks that seem to be making it more difficult or create the split between super rich and the working poor gets deeper and deeper and more legislated. You know, it's not that the bootstrap myth. It gets to be more and more ridiculous as the system has built in, you know, the cheat codes are not available until you get to a certain level of success, as you're talking about. But enough about that. On the plus side, sunsets are free. And you can act righteously and do good by people and be a good listener and give of your time and attention in a way that makes you into a affluent person just by the way you treat people and the way you walk through the world. And when you do that, you do not require resources to be a rich person and to go to bed each night going, I am abundant in the way I live, and I feel good that I am living in alignment with my values. And the truth is, you can have, you can be rich beyond your dreams and not have that peace if you are hoarding, if you are doing wrong by people, if you are not, you know, giving attention and time and love to people close to you and all people. And yet you can do all those things without resources. It just takes a discipline of not letting the financial stresses overwhelm you. And sometimes it takes faith at a level that is very difficult, but not impossible. You know, I can go back and look at chapters in my life when I, like, when things just worked out and I just had faith. And so now when I get to a situation where, like, oh my gosh, logically, I need to be more worried about this. And then I try to go, wait, but I have so many examples of when things worked out, not the way I thought they would or not the way I wanted them to, but they worked out anyway. And I just have a faith that when you float more, steer less, and love more, fear less, when you, you know, have courage and also work hard. I don't think it means you can just like sit around and wait for the world to take care of you. But if you work hard in the direction of your heart, you'll be okay. You'll be okay. And in that place, you can redefine success. And you don't have to have a bunch in the bank. You know, my grandpa, I would argue he was one of the wealthiest men I'd ever met. And he had nothing. He didn't even lock his door. He's like, I don't need any of this stuff. But he lived in this state of vibrating in satisfaction, because what he did have, he used to add to other people, to add love, to listen, to appreciate, to share his wisdom, or to be a vessel of change in listening to others. And that's a success that is going to trump your bank account always. It may not feel like it in the short term, but when your body is falling apart and you're starting to look at the end of your life, there's only one type of success that it will mean anything, and that is being the kind of person that you're capable of being. So thanks for being on that path and trying to be that person, because it's hard sometimes. So thank you for having the courage to do it and for supporting each other as we walk that path together. Thank you. I love you. But if you want any of my seminal fluid without semen in it, I'm happy to give you that. Pretty much anytime. On a park bench, while we're in line at the mall, at the porta potties, anything. Just let me know and I'd be happy to give you some seedless seminal fluid. You're welcome. And I apologize. And I love you. Have a beautiful day! Bye!